Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're cracking open a stack of sources, reports, maps, studies, all from before 2010. We want to understand the geology of the Afrin region in northwest Syria based just on that earlier information.
Yeah, our mission really is to pull out the key insights, maybe some surprising facts, the foundational knowledge geologists had back then about the ground beneath Afrin.
So sort of building a picture from the ground up using only what they knew at the time?
Exactly. And establishing this baseline, this pre-2010 understanding, it's really valuable. It gives us historical context, shows how they first looked at resources, helps understand the long-term processes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this came from big regional mapping efforts, often Soviet geologists in the mid to late 20th century. Large-scale maps like 1.200,000, 1.500,000. The broad strokes, really.
Okay, let's get our bearings then. We're talking about the Afrin district, northwest Syria, part of Aleppo Governorate, right up against the Turkish border. And the landscape is dominated by the Kurd Mountains, Kurdog, and the Afrin River Valley cutting through.
That's the place.
Right. So the biggest picture first, what's controlling the geology? It's got to be the tectonic plates, right? These huge forces.
Absolutely. Syria sits on the northern edge of the Arabian Plate. And this plate, well, it's always moving.
Right.
Before 2010, the estimates suggested it was moving north-northwest, converging with the Eurasian Plate up north at something like 18 millimeters per year, give or take a couple of millimeters.
Okay.
And at the same time, it's sliding past the African Plate to the west. This constant movement, this interaction, it's the engine driving everything we see geologically.
So Afrin's kind of caught in this massive slow-motion squeeze between these giant crustal blocks.
Precisely, yeah. And where these blocks interact, you get these major breaks, these fault systems. That's where the action is concentrated.
Okay, so what are the main ones affecting this area?
Well, the big one for western Syria is the Dead Sea Fault System, the DSFS. It's huge, about 1,000 kilometers long. It's a left lateral transform fault. Basically, the two sides are sliding past each other horizontally, and if you're on one side, the other moves to your left. It takes up the movement between the Arabian and African plates,
mm-hmm.
runs all the way from the Red Sea northwards through several countries right into western Syria.
And it leaves its mark, I guess, like creating valleys.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Like the Gab Valley. That's a classic pull-apart basin.
Oh.
Formed because the fault bends a bit, stretching the crust as it slides.
Oh.
But here's a really key point from the pre-2010 research studies by people like Brew, Gomez. They suggested that the amount of slip, the horizontal movement, on the northern end of the DSFS in Syria might have been, well, relatively limited in recent geological time.
Limited how?
Maybe only 5 to 17 kilometers total, over millions of years.
Mm.
Some work even hinted significant movement there might have started quite late. Geologically speaking, maybe only after 3.7 million years ago.
Okay, so what did that imply?
It led to this idea that maybe up in NW Syria, the DSFS wasn't accommodating the full plate motion like it does further south. The strain, the deformation might be more spread out, more distributed across the crust here.
Interesting.
And it was also thought to become kind of less defined, more diffuse as it approached the Turkish border.
Right. What other major faults are nearby?
Then you have the East Anatolian Fault System, the EAFS, another big left lateral strike slip fault, maybe 700 kilometers long.
Okay.
This one forms the boundary between the Anatolian subplate, sort of a smaller block, and the Arabian plate. It runs northeast from near Marash in Turkey.
And how does that affect Afrin?
Well, its southwestern parts, like the segment in the Amanos Mountains, they're very close to NW Syria and Afrin. So any movement on the EAFS definitely influences the stress field there. Some pre-2010 geologists even wondered if that Amanos segment was somehow connected to the Dead Sea Fault. The connection wasn't totally clear.
And there's another one further east.
Yeah, the Bitlis-Zagros suture zone. That's where Arabia is colliding head-on with Eurasia.
Yeah.
A real continental smash-up.
A suture zone, like stitches in the Earth's crust.
Sort of, yeah. It's where continents have rammed together. Now, it's not right next to Afrin, but the massive compression from that collision pushes across the whole northern Arabian platform, impacting NW Syria too.
So putting it all together, Afrin isn't on a simple boundary. It's stuck in the middle.
Pretty much. It's in what you might call a tectonic buffer zone or a transition area between the northern end of the DSFS and the EAFS.
Right.
And because it's in this complex spot, the deformation isn't simple either. The stress gets spread out, partitioned across different faults, different folds. It's complicated.
You see similar things elsewhere in Syria, right? Like the Palmyrites.
Exactly. Places like the Palmyrite Fold Belt or the Euphrates Fault System show how these big regional forces cause deformation even well inside the plate.
Oh, Hannah, the chai lady, is here. Roj Bosh, Anna.
Ah, fantastic. Perfect timing.
Let's grab a cup. Mmm, lovely. Mmm.
How is it today?
Oh, it's good. Just the right amount of spice, nicely sweet, not bitter at all.
Excellent. Mine too. Just what was needed.
Definitely. Okay, much better. Right, back to the rocks.
Let's do it.
We've talked about the big tectonic forces shaping things. What about the actual layers of rock, the stratigraphy? What did they know about Afrin's layers before 2010?
Okay, stratigraphy. So the pre-2010 picture, based on that regional mapping, starts deep, deep down. There's a Precambrian basement, really old crystalline rock, probably over 6 kilometers below us.
Wow, deep.
Yeah. And on top of that, you got this huge stack of sedimentary rocks laid down over the last half billion years or so of the Phanerozoic.
Sedimentary. So laid down in water, mostly.
A lot of it, yes. Mm. There's a general trend. Older rocks deeper down are often clastics, sandstones, shales, made from eroded bits of older rocks. Then as you come up towards the surface, you get more marine carbonates, limestones, dolomites formed in ancient seas. And importantly, there are gaps in this record. Unconformities, like missing pages in the history book. They often mark times of tectonic uplift and erosion.
Right. Makes sense. So focusing on Afrin, which layers were considered most important back then?
The Cretaceous period rocks. Definitely. Very widespread, very thick here. Mostly those marine carbonates, limestones, dolomites, with some softer marl layers mixed in.
What they're important for?
Water. Critically, limestones from a specific time in the Cretaceous to the Cenomanian-Turonian age form a major regional aquifer, a huge underground water resource, often called the lower aquifer.
How deep are we talking?
Well, pre-2010 studies around Aleppo showed wells hitting this layer anywhere from 100 down to maybe 1,200 meters, so it's substantial.
Okay. And you mentioned a key event in the Cretaceous.
Yes, the emplacement of the Berbassat ophiolite complex. Southwest of Afrin, near the coast.
Oh, feel it. That's oceanic crust pushed on the land, right?
Exactly. A big chunk of ancient seafloor and the mantle beneath it got thrust onto the edge of the Arabian continent. A major compressional squeeze, mm-hmm. Late Cretaceous time.
And this affects Afrin how?
Ah, here's the fascinating connection. The sources suggest the Afrin Basin, a sedimentary basin right near where Afrin is now, was actually forming around the same time this ophiolite was being pushed into place.
Forming while the collision was happening.
Seems like it, because deposits from the Maastrichtian age, right at the end of the Cretaceous, found within this Afrin basin, contain ophiolitic detritus.
Bits of the ophiolite.
Exactly. Eroded fragments of those oceanic rocks were washing into the basin as it was sinking. It directly links the basin's formation to that big tectonic event nearby. A really neat insight from the early work.
Cool. Okay, what's above the Cretaceous?
Next up are the Paleogene rocks, often separated by one of those unconformities, those gaps. These also contain an important aquifer system, the middle, or Paleogene aquifer, generally shallower, maybe 100 to 500 meters deep near Aleppo.
And what kind of rocks are they?
Well, the Paleocene part has carbonates from deeper shelf waters, limestones, marls, some chert, tiny floating fossils called planktic foraminifera. Then the early to middle Eocene has limestones formed in shallower seas, full of larger fossils called pneumolites. Higher up, you get chalkier, more clay-rich limestones.
Any gaps here, too?
Yep. A big regional gap, a hiatus during the late Eocene and Oligocene, suggests more tectonic instability, uplift, erosion. And sometimes you find layers of basalt volcanic rock within the Paleogene sequence, too.
Interesting. Okay, moving younger still.
Into the Neogene. That's the Miocene and Pliocene. This can form an upper aquifer in places. The sediments here are more varied. Southwest of Afrin, some interpretations pointed to turbidites, deep water deposits.
But near Afrin itself?
Importantly, middle Miocene limestones outcrop. They're visible at the surface in ridges like Jebel Samani, south of Afrin, and also north of Aleppo. These were seen as really crucial recharge areas.
Recharge, where rainwater soaks in?
Exactly. Places where rainfall gets into the ground and eventually replenishes those deeper Cretaceous and Paleogene aquifers. Very important.
Right. And the Pliocene.
Pliocene rocks include thick, lacustrine sediment, stuff laid down in lakes, marls, silts, clays, conglomerates, filling up depressions like the Gab Basin over a kilometer thick there. And Pliocene basalts were known to outcrop nearby, too.
So volcanism was happening then?
Oh, yes. The Neogene saw significant basaltic volcanism across NW Syria, and it even continued into the Quaternary, the most recent period. There was volcanic belts stretching northwards through the Aleppo area toward Kurdoa into Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
It really ramped up in the late Miocene, early Pliocene. pre-2010 dating of some of these basalts erupted right through the plate and cut by the northern DSFS, put them between about 6.4 and 3.7 million years old.
Okay, and finally, the very youngest stuff.
That's the Quaternary system. Last 2.6 million years or so. Mostly loose, unconsolidated sediments. Alluvial sands, clays, gravels, and river valleys like the Afrens. Slope-washed deposits called colluvium on hillsides.
Pretty much what you see on the surface today in the low areas.
Exactly. Earlier geologists like Ponikarov had described similar young deposits near active faults elsewhere in Syria, providing a model. And quaternary studies really picked up in the 90s and 2000s, often linked with archaeology.
How so?
Finding things like old river terraces or alluvial fans, sometimes with artifacts that help date them. These features gave clues about past climate changes and maybe ongoing tectonic tilting or uplift.
Uh-huh.
Hydrogeology work even showed groundwater in the shallow Paleogene aquifer was often quite young Holocene age, recent recharge, while water deeper down in the Cretaceous aquifer was often much older Pleistocene age. It had been underground a lot longer.
So tying it back to Afrin's landscape, those Cretaceous and Paleogene carbonates are really key.
Absolutely crucial. They form the bulk of the Kurdea Mountains. They hold the major groundwater resources. And because they're limestones, they have potential for karst development caves, sinkholes, and also fracture permeability, where water flows through cracks, vital for how groundwater moves.
Okay, so we've got the layers. How did geologists before 2010 understand how those tectonic forces actually assembled these layers? The structure, the faults and folds.
Right, the structure. This is where you really see the impact of those regional forces. And the Kurd Mountains, Kurd Dagh, are central.
That prominent highland.
Yeah, part of the limestone massif, mostly limestone. The key pre-2010 understanding, the core concept, was that Kurd Dagh exists because of structural inversion.
Inversion. You mean flipping something upside down?
Sort of. It's the inversion of that pre-existing late Cretaceous sedimentary basin. We mentioned the Afrin Basin.
Okay. Explain that inversion process again.
Imagine that basin forming in the late Cretaceous. Maybe the crust stretched a bit, it subsided, and sediments filled it up, perhaps kilometers thick. Later, the regional forces changed from pulling apart to pushing together compression.
Right.
Instead of making totally new faults, the old faults that originally let the basin drop down were reactivated. They started moving again, but in the opposite direction.
So faults that drop blocks down started pushing them up.
Exactly. Normal faults became reverse or thrust faults. This big squeeze effectively turned the basin inside out, pushing the sediments upwards and creating the mountain range, the Kurd Dagh.
And this was driven by that long-term compression?
Yes, sustained compression, potentially starting in the late Cretaceous and lasting maybe into the late Miocene. It's a classic way mountain ranges can form from old basins.
Got it. And Afrin's position between those big fault systems, the DSFS and EAFS, that plays a role too.
A huge role. It creates that complex stress field. And there were specific fault systems recognized nearby.
Like which ones?
The Lakakia-Kilis fault system. Definitely recognized in NW Syria. And here's a key piece of evidence available before 2010. Seismic monitoring data from 1995 onwards.
What did it show?
It showed clusters of small earthquakes along this system and the pattern of movement. Any trending left lateral strike slip, just like the bigger regional fault.
And Kilis is very close to Afrin geographically.
Right. So this seismic activity was strong evidence for active strike slip faulting happening nearby, influencing the stress and deformation around Afrin.
Was there talk of a specific Afrin fault?
There was. Some researchers, like Westaway, had proposed it conceptually. Maybe as a northeast continuation of the northern DSFS, perhaps the Algab fault.
But was it confirmed?
That's the thing. The pre-2010 understanding seems uncertain. Studies suggested it might just stop without clearly linking up to the EAFS. Its exact nature, whether it was a major through-going fault or something more localized, wasn't really pinned down back then.
Okay. And the faults that actually lifted the Kurd Dagh during inversion?
Well, the inversion model requires them. Those reactivated normal faults acting as thrusts. While detailed maps might not have named every single local fault before 2010, their existence was implanted in the structural model for how the mountains formed.
Where did the general fault patterns come from?
A lot of the basic understanding relied on those foundational Soviet-era regional maps by people like Ponikarov and Duvertret. They laid the groundwork.
And they knew the area was still active.
Oh, yeah. Those ongoing small earthquakes recorded by the Syrian National Seismological Network since 95 near Latakia-Kilis and elsewhere were clear proof of active tectonics. Plus, paleostress analysis looking at tiny rock features to figure out ancient stress directions gave clues about when and how the deformation happened. Some studies suggested shifts, maybe from NWSC compression in the Miocene, changing towards more NS strike slip later on.
So besides faults, there was folding too.
Definitely. All that compression also buckled and folded the rock layers within the curved DAF. They aren't flat anymore. You could draw parallels to structures seen elsewhere in Syria, like the Big Bends, monoclines in the coastal ranges, or the more complex folds in the Palmyrides.
So summarizing the structure, it wasn't simple at all.
Not at all. You had the NE trending strike slip system nearby, Latakia Killis, seemingly active, plus the compressional structures from the basin inversion that built the mountains. It points to complex strain partitioning.
Meaning the stress gets divided up.
Yeah, the crust responds with both shortening uplift and folding and sideways shear strike slip faulting. Which makes perfect sense, given Afrin's location in that transition zone between the giant transform faults.
All right, so that's the structure underground. How did that translate to the surface landscape, the geomorphology, as understood before 2010?
The landscape is really the direct result of all that geology and the ongoing erosion.
The Kurd Mountains being the most obvious feature?
Exactly. The Kurd Day. Distinct highland, mostly limestone. Its height is purely down to that tectonic uplift, the basin inversion, that creates the steep slopes, the high relief.
And the Afrin River.
A major feature, carving its path around the base of the mountains, separating them from the plains and other nearby mountains. Its course is almost certainly guided by the geology underneath.
How so?
Rivers tend to follow weaker rock zones, maybe fault lines, or the edges of these uplifted blocks. The sharp boundary between the mountains and the valley floor is likely structurally controlled, probably by those inversion faults.
And in the lower areas?
That's where you find those young quaternary deposits we talked about. Alluvial sands, gravels, silts in the river valley, sandy loams, colluvium washed down from the slopes.
Just like Ponikarov described near other fault zones.
Exactly. And those quaternary studies from the 90s, 2000s identified river terraces, alluvial fans evidence of how the landscape has changed even in the relatively recent past, maybe due to climate shifts or continued subtle tectonic movements.
So the pre-2010 view of the landscape was dynamic.
Very much so. A product of uplift, building the mountains and the river system, simultaneously tearing them down and depositing sediment. It's the surface expression of all that Cenozoic tectonic activity acting on the older rocks.
Wow, okay. That paints a really vivid picture based on the pre-2010 sources. Let's try to synthesize. What were the absolute core takeaways, the must-knows about Afrin's geology back then?
Right. Pulling it together from these sources, the key pre-2010 concepts were, first, tectonic dominance.
Yeah.
Everything is shaped by those big plate interactions, Arabian, African, Eurasian plates, and the major fault systems, DSFS and EAFS. Second, Kurd Dagh as an inverted basin. This was a really strong understanding. The mountains are there because the late Cretaceous Afrin Basin got squeezed and pushed up. Fundamental.
Got it.
Third, the stratigraphic framework. They had a good general picture. Thick marine carbonates from the Mesozoic-Tainozoic over a deep basement. Neogene volcanism nearby. And critically, Cretaceous and Paleogene rocks holding significant groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth, a complex northern DSFS. The understanding was evolving, but it wasn't seen as a simple plate boundary here. Maybe more interplate, later movement, distributed strain. That complexity is key.
Right.
Fifth, active seismicity. Small earthquakes proved the processes were ongoing. And sixth, the foundational mapping. Those Soviet-era maps were the bedrock of this knowledge.
That seems pretty solid. What were the gaps, though? What did they not know so well based on these sources?
Well, looking at what's presented as regional or still debated, some things were likely less clear. The fine details of local faults right within Afrin, their exact geometry, how much they'd slipped, how they connected, that tentative Afrin fault falls into this category of uncertainty.
Okay.
Also, highly detailed local stratigraphy. Knowing the regional layers is one thing, but mapping out every subtle variation within the Kurd Dagh or the original Afrin Basin fill would require more focused work.
Uh-huh.
The precise mechanics of that DSFS-EAFS interaction zone. How exactly does the regional strain get divided up between all the structures right there? And detailed subsurface structure. Things like the exact depth to basement rock or the precise shape of those deep inversion faults would need more localized geophysics, which probably wasn't widely available or published for just Afrin back then.
So a solid regional framework, but the really fine-grained local picture needed more investigation.
Exactly. They understood that big picture, the main story of the Kurd Dagh's formation, but the close-up details likely still held questions.
So that gives us a really clear picture of the geological understanding of the Afrin region. built piece by piece from the information available before 2010 using these reports and studies.
Yeah.
We've covered the massive tectonic forces, the layers of rock, how the Kurd Mountains formed from that inverted basin idea, and the fault systems shaping the landscape, all based on this foundational work.
It really is fascinating, isn't it, seeing how decades of work, like those early maps, built this understanding. It provides such a critical baseline for anyone trying to understand this complex region today.
Absolutely. And it definitely leaves you thinking, how well does this foundational picture hold up against more recent research conducted after 2010? And maybe more pointedly, how have subsequent events, including significant earthquakes in the broader region, interacted with this geological setting they understood back then?
That's the crucial next question, isn't it?
Thank you for joining us for this look into the sources today. We really appreciate you spending the time exploring this with us.
And that's what we try to do here at the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Examine the source material, unpack it, and see what insights it offers. There's always more to learn from the evidence itself.